Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Good morning, folks. Hope things are going well for you this Friday morning, January 3rd. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Walt Leger, president and CEO of New Orleans & Company. Obviously, we'll get updates as to what's going on throughout the city in the aftermath of the terrorist attack that occurred on Bourbon Street the other day. At 12, we'll meet with Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints, the last game of the season. We'll also talk about the Sugar Bowl as well, and we'll talk about the Saints game. Difference maker for the opponent, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They win, they go to the playoffs. They lose, they do not go. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll talk about a couple of issues, and we'll go to the talk lines. Really want to hear from you as to what your reaction to all that has been done and said throughout this horrific event, in the aftermath of this horrific event as well, and what you're feeling. At 10:30, we'll visit with Congressman Troy Carter, U.S. House of Representatives. We'll talk about the horrific events of that terrorist attack the other day, and we'll also talk about the House leadership position. They go into session today, and they have to elect a speaker. And it's pretty close. It's going to be interesting to see Troy Carter as a Democrat, where he breaks. Obviously, not bad in Louisiana having the top position in the House, right, as well as the second most powerful position in the House. Both seats are positions held by representatives from the state of Louisiana. So we'll find out from him what his thinking is relative to the election of a new speaker. And joining us now, Jeff Hundley, CEO of the Sugar Bowl. Jeff, I just wanted to say, you know, we've all talked about terrorism, the use of violence, you know, in order to achieve political or ideological aims, and obviously leveraging fear in the community, the disruption of our lives, of our way of life. And in my view, the easiest way to defeat that and beat back on that is to go about what we do each and every day, the rights, the privileges, the opportunities, the freedoms that we have in this country. And I'm saying this with this context in mind. I know this was not easy for you guys, your organization, to pull off what y'all pulled off. But I cannot overestimate the importance of that game being held, and that game being held as soon as possible, in my view. And I know there were headwinds from all directions, some of which you probably cannot talk about, and I'm not asking you to do so. But I just wanted you to know that I appreciate everything that you and your organization and all of your volunteers were able to do. I thought last night went without a hitch, and I thought it was a great presentation of what we do best in this city as we're built to host. Your thoughts?
Well, thank you for that. You're very kind, Newell, to say that we agreed as an organization, that the Sugar Bowl committee and staff, that we needed to play. And it, you know, you weigh that, you know, with the obvious public safety issue, but we felt comfortable. We had a commitment from the governor and the mayor and all the law enforcement agencies at the, you know, state, federal, and local level, that we could do so. And so we thought it was important, you know, even so much that, you know, matter of hours that we were able to push it. You know, originally, you know, the thought was just to play it again at the same 7:45 schedule a day later. And we pushed to play earlier in the day to get things going. And, you know, we believe it came off well. And, you know, don't want to beat our own drum here, but we're pleased with the way it came off. I felt like there was a spirit of, a special spirit that existed in the stadium last night. Started with the anthem and the moment of silence that we had in recognition of the victims and their families. But it was important to get back to life. And that was, you know, I think everybody there, the enthusiasm of the fans there was obvious and loud. And I think everybody was proud to be there and to get back to life as we know it in the United States, and that we're not going to be stopped or even hindered as we go forward with this. You know, and I don't want to, you know, again, overstate it, but hopefully last night was a small step towards, you know, healing and getting back to what we know and love about this country.
No doubt. I think that there was a special spirit in that stadium last night, a very respectful spirit as well, one to the victims, their families, the sacrifices that have been made by so many, to include the military that fights each and every day for the freedoms that we enjoy, as well as the first responder community. Tommy Tucker said it on his show. He was really moved by the fact that the first responder community was kind of acting as ambassadors for the city, where they were being thanked by those that were attending the game. But the officers themselves were thanking those for coming out and, you know, knowing that there had decisions to be made, whether or not that we were going to let this individual succeed in eliciting fear in our community. And I think a lot of people came together and I think a lot of that, Jeff, was the belief not only in you but in your organization and the way that y'all handled yourself.
Well, again, we're, you know, grateful if that's true or not. I don't know, but certainly we intended to do well. And, you know, the Sugar Bowl organization has been a fixture in this community for 91 years now, and throughout its existence has tried to be a good community citizen and partner. And we felt like it was our duty, and, you know, without getting into too much inside baseball, you know, not everybody was on the same page initially about, you know, going forward as quickly as we did. But ultimately, you know, we felt it was the right thing. And I think what happened last night in the stadium you know, some of the images that you're seeing on television now of fans in the stands and how it obviously impacted people in a positive way. We feel vindicated and are certain that we did the right thing by going forward and playing the game as we did.
And in keeping with Sugar Bowl history, somewhat of a crazy game last night.
It was
wild.
Yes, it was. It was crazy. You know, it was closer probably than the score indicated. It wasn't the prettiest game ever, but a one special teams play and a one turnover, you know, on Georgia's side, you know, probably made the difference in the game. But, you know, it was certainly a lot of fun and you know, having two programs of that magnitude, you know, just added to the moment. and made it a special night for everybody who was there. And quite frankly, Newell, we didn't know what to expect in terms of the crowd, whether, you know, because initially we were hearing that a lot of people were leaving town and that people had dumped tickets. And, you know, the stadium was fairly full last night, and more so than what I probably anticipated, quite honestly. And so that was heartwarming as well. And the fact that it came off safely, and, you know, the law enforcement and military presence was very obvious, but not, you know, overdone to where it would scare people. But certainly I think everybody who came felt safe, and it proved out to be that way.
Yeah, as you watch the interviews of the folks entering the game, it was obvious that, you know, they wanted to stand up for all the things that we just talked about, right? And they were very thankful for everything that was done in order to bring the game about. Now, you guys, there were a lot of things that y'all did in advance of this, and obviously a lot of things that had occurred in advance of this horrific event that all seemed to go off without a hitch as well, and was, from my perspective, seemed to be very, very successful.
Yeah, we were having a normal week until we weren't. We had the schools in, and our parade on New Year's Eve was, you know, that afternoon was fantastic, great crowds out there. You know, our weather committee did a great job this week. It was beautiful. So, you know, everything added up. You know, we were all moving forward until somebody got crazy, and we had to pivot, and that was a stressful, you know, 36 hours to get ready. But everybody was committed to the task at hand, and, you know, again, you know, the Sugar Bowl committee has a track record at different times in its history of rising to the occasion and standing up and being counted when it needed to be. And once again, I feel like the organization and volunteers and staff and everybody involved, the city overall, I told someone last night that, you know, if it was ever in question, it shouldn't be now that why New Orleans is the greatest major event city in the country. Because, the way we rallied in such a short amount of time, and it took a citywide, statewide, you know, effort to make it happen, but it came off as good as any Sugar Bowl we've ever done.
No, I agree. There is no doubt that we were tested, right? Let's talk about the two schools for a moment. I know that you had a lot of conversations, obviously, with them, putting them at ease. They had the nervousness leading up to the game, the anxiety of the game, and then the everything, all the emotion wrapped around this event. It seemed to me that those coaches had quite a task at hand, too. Talk to us a little bit about what you were hearing from those guys.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, the coaches themselves are leaders of young men, and both are very good at what they do, and you know, they're embody what coaches have become, you know, in today's day and age. That, you know, they're part drill sergeant, but part father figure too, and I think that that was evident on both sides, that there's a level of empathy. The kids knew that they cared, and the way that they brought them together, didn't deny what had just taken place, but I think there was a lot of reassurance that went on. There was some family time that Notre Dame was able to have, you know, that allowed the players access to their families, to, you know, just to kind of comfort one another. And but they quickly rebounded. You know, you get, football is a great game of teaching, you know, you get knocked down, you get back up, you know, play by play throughout the game. And that's what they did. Georgia, you know, quickly rebounded and had a regular practice the night before the game here in the Superdome. Notre Dame, you know, chose to, you know, do just a walkthrough practice in the hotel. But, you know, those two coaches, knowing them the way that we do, that, you know, they just did a great job in holding the kids' hands, but also encouraging, you know, you got to, you know, we still got a job to do. And, you know, obviously that was a hard fought, you know, game last night. So there was, I don't think there were any lingering effects of the incident in the minds of those young men when they lined up against each other last night or yesterday. I keep saying last night.
Yeah.
I got to have an afternoon game at the Sugar Bowl. I actually walked up to my office at halftime in the dome, and I looked out the window and I'm like, my gosh, it's light out. I forgot. I was thinking we always play at night, but yeah, interesting deal all the way around.
Jeff, I know it's probably soon, you know, or maybe too soon, but I'll ask anyway. Your thoughts about, you know, does this change things? When you think about these football events, I'm sure there's a lot of conversation amongst the college football playoff folks about the upcoming week with two more games, right? One Thursday, one Friday.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure it's got, you know, everybody's attention, and I'm sure that you know, law enforcement in the, I think Miami and Dallas have the semifinal games, and Atlanta has the national championship game, that everybody would be probably even extra diligent, you know, on the public safety side. I think never that cities are not thinking along those lines, but, you know, when something, you know, extraordinary like that happens, you got to relook at everything, and I'm sure that's probably being done as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, on behalf of myself, and if I'm so bold as to suggest on behalf of everyone in the city, thank you and your organization. A job well done. It was important, I think, for the city. It was important moving forward for our city. And I don't want to overstate this, but I'm not so sure that everybody would have been able to pull this off. And as you just said earlier, if this test doesn't prove to folks that we are the city to host major events, I don't know what will.
Well, and a big amen to that. I think that, you know, it's a great city. You know, I tell people all the time when my wife and I moved here to work for the Sugar Bowl, we thought we were going to be here 3 or 4 years, and it's 31 years later. It's a special city that we're proud to be a part of.
Well, thank you again. Congratulations. Get some sleep.
We need it. I'll be honest with you. We need it.
No doubt, for sure. Jeff Hundley, CEO of Sugar Bowl, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And thank you so much for all that you and your organization has done for the city. We truly appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I was Jeff Hundley, CEO of the Sugar Bowl. When we return, we'll talk to Congressman Troy Carter, U.S. House of Representatives, Louisiana District 2. Stay.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We're in the process of getting in touch with Congressman Troy Carter, U.S. House of Representatives, Louisiana District 1. We'll talk a little bit about the terrorist attack. Obviously, they're very busy today. It's the first day that they go into session in Congress, and they're going about the election of a House speaker. Obviously, Congress goes into session during this lame duck period of the presidency of the executive department, that is, up until January 20th. A very, you know, kind of a weird time in government and governance. A lot going on. In fact, the president and the first lady will be visiting the city Monday. They announced today that they will be coming at some point in time on Monday to talk to folks here and victims here in the aftermath of this terrorist attack. And I know that there's going to be folks that are going to be trying to make some kind of political statement about that. You know, we should give the president the respect that he's due and not make this a political issue, understanding that we need to move forward. You know, I'm more concerned on a national level of a couple of things. One being, it's amazing how some issues we're able to pick up of things that are posted on the social networks relatively easy. And then other things, such as a lot of the messaging that was promoted by this individual in this incident in New Orleans, seem to fall through the cracks. And we don't know whether or not it raised the antenna of anyone, whether or not it raised alerts for anyone. And I'm just curious about the algorithms that are kind of used and where we're going with all of this. And why is it that some things are more easily detected than others? And I think these are questions that should be asked by members of Congress and others of the folks that are monitoring this, both in the private sector and in the public sector, as our intelligence officials and others attempt to gather street-level intelligence to provide a safe and secure environment for us each and every day. That is a worthy conversation to be had. It's one that needs to be had. It's one that needs to be apolitical, truly, because it is something that we are going to be dealing with for a long time. These terrorist threats and this advocacy of hate and promotion of hate against the United States, we need to take seriously. Yes, it'll dissipate. Yes, it'll go away for a little while, but it always tends to come back, right? And we just experienced that in this city. We have seen it from afar a number of times. That's why yesterday I said, pick a city, pick a state, pick a country throughout the world. And what happened here could happen, you know, there. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. When there's evil in someone's mind or their heart, and they want to go about doing something, it's hard to protect everyone from that actually happening. There are more areas of opportunities than one can even remotely imagine, because they can devise and their plan and prepare for whatever they're doing. Typically, if they don't share it with anyone and they're a lone wolf, in many respects, a lone wolf is a good thing. And in many respects, the lone wolf in the course of an investigation is a bad thing moving forward, because they're harder to detect. The more that they share information with others, the more likely that there will be a leak, and the more likely that authorities will ultimately find out or maybe have some advance warning of what's about to happen. These are all things that we need to think about as we move forward. And this transfer of power that we're going through at this point in time, ideologically, huge differences, obviously, right? I don't need to go into this between where Joe Biden stands on a number of issues and where Donald Trump stands on a number of issues. And it's why there is this transfer of power, because the country's belief system has moved more to center-right than to center-left. And with that come challenges and a recognition of these challenges. But there are some things that need to be more sacrosanct, in my view, and need to be more apolitical in the way that we go about identifying, dealing with these threats that are presented in our communities across this country each and every day. And it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. Dave Cohen joins us, the news director for WWL. Dave, welcome.
Noel, interestingly, the FBI and other agencies overnight issued an advisory to police agencies across the country that what we saw in New Orleans may be the tip of an iceberg, where these attacks using rented vehicles are something that need to be on police agencies' radar, that they need to watch for rented vehicles sitting in one place for a lengthy period of time, that they need to be aware of the possibilities of attacks on pedestrians with rented vehicles, and that the use of a rented vehicle may only be the beginning of an attack that may involve other unknown or developing incidents that then follow the use of that rented vehicle. So we are already seeing what happened here in New Orleans and what happened in Las Vegas a day later.
Yeah.
We both using rented vehicles, oddly both rented electric vehicles, may now be something that terror networks are utilizing or advising individuals to do. They did find on the attacker's search history and messaging through the two laptops and three cell phones that they've recovered here in New Orleans and in Houston, that he was getting messaging from ISIS, from the Islamic Nation, not directly to him, but the kind of generic messaging that was being sent out to their followers, telling them things like, go out and kill Americans, go out and kill as many Christians as you can, go out and so this may be further development of what they were able to find in terms of that messaging that he was consuming and the guidance he may have received either directly and personally or in general from ISIS advising the use of rented vehicles.
This is one of those slippery slope issues, right, Dave, as it relates to Big Brother, government, you know, collecting this information as to what they do with it, working with the private sector on the social networks and these algorithms that I was talking about, and where this ultimately happens. And it may be that there has to, I think there has to be a conversation about where we go with this, because this is going to be the new era, so to speak. And we've been in this era for a little bit already, but I think we're going to see it grow where we're trying to influence the thoughts of other of folks that are, you know, suspect and have a willingness to listen to this propaganda and act on it.
Exactly. And if that's going out from ISIS to their followers like this individual, plus if he's posting videos hours before he commits the attack, pretty much saying what he's about to do, you do wish somebody would have seen that. Somebody would have heard that. Somebody would have keyed in on that and been able to stop him. But then you're right, it does raise those Big Brother questions as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, Dave Cohen. When we return, we'll visit with Congressman Troy Carter. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Congressman Troy Carter, District 2, U.S. House of Representatives, Louisiana. Troy, welcome to the show, and Happy New Year.
Hey, Sheriff. Always good to be with you. Happy New Year to you.
Troy, obviously, the city recovering from the horrific event, terrorist attack, the other day. I know that you've been down here before this session started. Your thoughts?
You know, it was a horrific action of cowardice, terrorism that this clown would converge upon the city of New Orleans during a time of celebration to wreak havoc. I'm very proud of our local law enforcement, NOPD, our various sheriff's offices, federal FBI and federal agencies, as well as the FBI and the state police, who just absolutely stood up at a time when we needed them most to demonstrate our oneness in pushing back against terror and demonstrating to the American people, the Louisiana people, and more specifically the people of New Orleans, as well as those visiting for the Sugar Bowl, that we would do everything in our power to bring these clowns to justice and to ensure that the safety of our community is number one. Someone asked me, were we going to keep the Sugar Bowl going? And my answer was very clearly, as long as we're able to ensure the security of the people, because as important as this football game is, nothing is more important than the safety of our citizens and our visitors. And so when we postponed it, it was a measure of caution, abundance of caution, to ensure that we would be able to protect the people. And that's the mission that we carry forward now. The NOPD, our sheriffs in the surrounding areas, we know how to manage these large events. Sugar Bowls come every year. Super Bowls come frequent. Final Four, Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, PGA Tours. And with our NOPD and our surrounding partners, we have gained a reputation of being able to manage and protect our citizens. A terrorist attack is a different animal. A terrorist attack could happen anywhere. It can happen in anywhere in the world. And what happened in New Orleans could have happened anywhere. I'm grateful to our president for stepping up and releasing the unlimited funds to make sure the full faith and credit of the United States would back our governor and our mayor and our local law enforcement. My heart and prayers and thoughts go out to those individuals who lost their lives and their families. Our hearts and prayers go out to the many individuals who are still in the hospital recovering, and a certain huge thank you to the brave two officers who put their lives on the line in the line of duty and who were injured, who are now stable and recovering. A huge thank you to them, as well as all of the other law enforcement. Listen, we are Louisiana, we are New Orleans, and we're strong and we're resilient, and we'll rebound from this. And for the criminals out there, we will find you when you do these kind of things, and we will bring you to justice. It appears by all account from the FBI that this was a sole actor, that he acted alone, so it doesn't appear to be any accomplices. But a message to anyone who thinks they can copycat: we will find you. There's no rock large enough that you can hide under.
Obviously, this presents after action review opportunities to look at a number of things. Do you have any expectations at the federal level of what you might like to see as more, like a more proactive approach, a collection of actionable intelligence, maybe a look-see at algorithms as to what's out there on the social media, social networks? And sometimes it seems as though we're able to respond to things that are posted relatively quickly, and then other times we seem to have things fall through the cracks.
Yeah, there are a couple of points in that regard. As you know, I served on the city council many years ago and represented the French Quarter. Had those bollards been working, particularly in the 100 block of Bourbon Street, where the width would not have accommodated a car. On Canal Street, the width is wide enough to accommodate a car to jump the sidewalk. So two tow trucks in that space would have been sufficient to stop that vehicle. And in the 100 block of the, after you pass the 100 block, the 200 block, the sidewalks are too small. If the bollards are up, a car could have never gotten through there. The second point is, 2019, there was a study, I'm told, that identified that there were weaknesses. We need to go and look at that study and figure out how to amplify and activate whatever those recommendations are, in addition to doing a complete postpartum on every entry point and exit point of the quarter to ensure that every best practice and every modern technology is utilized, that nothing like this can ever happen again. You know, the very nature of terrorism activity is it's shock and awe. It catches a point of weakness. Now we have to tighten our hatches and make sure that we're using everything in our power to correct that. What I'll be asking as a member of the Homeland Security Committee is that we look deeper into, refortify our issues and our resources with Homeland Security, with FBI, with Department of Justice, in conjunction with our local authorities, to look at all of the signs that we may have missed before to ensure that we're doing better as we go forward. This is going to be a work in progress.
Yeah. Obviously, this is a threat that it's been around for a while, and every now and again, we go through a period of quiet, so to speak, and then all of a sudden it rears its ugly head. We've seen it around the country, some incidents in Europe, the challenges are the same, right, for all of us.
That's exactly right. And as I mentioned, what happened in New Orleans on New Year's Eve could have happened anywhere. We saw an attempted terrorist issue in Las Vegas. Turns out to not have any fatalities other than the perpetrator. We've seen this happen with the Boston bomber. We've seen this happen. And it can happen in any city when we have a major event going on. Fortunately, we're smarter than them. We're better equipped than them. And each one of these instances, be it in New Orleans, Boston, or Las Vegas, we learn from it, we study it, and we build a better way to fortify and secure our people.
Let's pivot real quick, Congressman. Today, a big vote in the election of a House Speaker, somebody from Louisiana, Mike Johnson, two prominent positions that we hold with Louisiana representatives. Your thought about the Speaker's election?
As you know, it's pivotal. We have the smallest margin of leadership in 93 years among Republicans and Democrats. This is the smallest margin we've ever had for a prevailing party. And there's quite a bit of grumbling, nothing that has been secret. Chip Roy and others have made it abundantly clear that they intend to not vote for Speaker Johnson. If that happens, we may find ourselves in a situation that we did during Mike McCarthy's speakership and ultimately the ascension of our current speaker, that we may end up having multiple votes until we get a speaker. I'm hopeful that we don't go through another 15-round series. It certainly does not bode well for the American people that we have difficulty electing our speaker. But this is one of those cases where the Republican conference has the majority, and it's incumbent upon them to choose a speaker of their liking.
Where do you find yourself? You feel additional pressure being a Louisiana representative, understanding that having the House Speaker as well as Steve Scalise's position bodes well for the state of Louisiana?
Yes, I think it works well that we're all in leadership. I, as the first vice chair of the Congressional Black Caucus and a Democratic whip, as well as having the number one and number two posts in the Republican conference being from Louisiana, the Republican Party. However, my allegiance is going to be to Hakeem Jeffries, who's our party leader and one that I believe has the ability and demonstrated leadership to represent a broad swath of Americans and not just one party, but everyone.
So your thought is that your allegiance would be to your party rather than the state?
No, my allegiance would be to the American people. And I just happen to think that Hakeem Jeffries has the ability to represent my state in totality, Republican and Democrat alike, and the entire country. And very respectfully, my colleagues have not demonstrated the same willingness to be bipartisan. Listen, I'm a proud Democrat, but I will tell you that parties have hurt our system. We have to get back to representing Americans, representing our states and our country, not falling in line with our party. So when I say my party, I mean a party that encompasses Republicans and Democrats. I think Hakeem Jeffries is the best person to represent the entire country, not just one party. He happens to be a Democrat.
And you believe that there's a possibility that Hakeem Jeffries could be elected as the Speaker of the House?
Not likely. Not likely. But you asked how I would vote, so I wanted to answer that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just, with that understanding, it just kind of seems like a wasted exercise for you then. I mean, if Louisiana wouldn't be the benefactor of your vote as a Louisiana resident.
And well, listen, when the margins are this close,
I get all the partisanship stuff. But I mean, if eventuality is that Mike Johnson would ultimately be elected, why
that may not be the case, though.
But I mean, why
it may not be the case when you have margins as close as this? It could very well.
You could be a pivotal vote for somebody from Louisiana being one of the most powerful elected officials in the country.
And I served well with Speaker Johnson. We served in legislature together.
It's all about bringing the pork back home, right? I mean, isn't that one of the primary purposes that is served by individuals there? I mean, look, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it just kind of seems if it's a foregone conclusion that the Republicans are going to be there. It just seemed to me that it would be politically symbolic to the folks in Louisiana that we would be all for one as Louisianans.
Yeah, in this case, because of the margins being as thin as it is, it could go either way. And if I have an opportunity to cast a vote to have Akeem Jeffries to be Speaker of the House, I am confident that Akeem Jeffries will be able to represent Republicans and Democrats alike. He's demonstrated that in his leadership. He's demonstrated that in his career. And I'm certain that in the past, we haven't seen that. So I am hoping for and banking for a more holistic approach to governance, not one that simply leads for one party, but leads for the American people.
It would seem to me that you could go a long way with exhibiting that by casting a vote for Louisiana, but we'll agree to disagree.
Fair enough. Well, we've done that before, and we keep it moving.
We're still friends. We will always be friends. That's not going to step in the way of this.
I think it's a fair question. It's absolutely fair, and I think that we'll see what happens in the upcoming votes. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out. Know this, that I'm 100% Louisiana through and through, and I've demonstrated that in working with both Steve and Mike and with Republicans and Democrats alike to bring literally billions of dollars home for the Louisiana people. And those dollars that come to Louisiana are not for Republicans or Democrats. They're for the people of Louisiana. That's how I've governed. It's how I'll continue to govern.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Congressman Troy Carter, U.S. House of Representatives, Louisiana District 2. Good luck today during that voting process.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back, we'll go to the talk lines. Getting a lot of texts about that conversation as it relates to the vote by Congressman Troy Carter relative to the House Speaker's position. Very strong opinions on both sides of that issue. It's just kind of interesting. We talk about bipartisanship a lot, but when there are opportunities that are presented to reach across the aisle, especially when you are a representative in Louisiana, we're focused on margins. I just humbly and respectfully disagree. I think there's a lot more at stake. We are a state in a tough position, and we should leverage all that we have.